It is 7.
Love Talk Radio.
Certainly worth discussing is, do we need another Walmart? And, you know, we've got three Walmarts. I used to defend Walmart quite a bit because I thought, you know, it's a kind of a study in the economy of scale and capitalism and everything. And then as time went by, the more I thought about it, the more experience I had with Walmart, I began to kind of think a little more deeply on it. And so I guess the question is, in a lot of these places where you've got Walmarts coming in, does it have the power of a monopoly, you know? And I remember hearing this story about this pickle company that signed a deal with Walmart, and Walmart demanded a certain amount of, you know, a certain price and everything. And I can't remember what pickle company it was, but this idea that they were dealing with this colossus that had to be appeased and everything. There's, I think, a few issues out there. Is Walmart a true monopoly? I doubt that it would satisfy the definition, but it may have the impact of a monopoly in a lot of communities. Another issue would be, to the extent that they deal with China and then what the conditions are in China. I mean, people on the left are very caught up in the conditions of sweatshops in other countries. So to what extent does Walmart and any other business deal with sweatshop issues? And then another issue related to this is, you know, pushing out the local mom and pops and everything. And, you know, you might say, well, the reason that Walmart survives and thrives while other companies go out of business is because of price. I mean, price and the amount of stuff they have, the variety, and the price that it comes in at. So, you know, you can't argue with that. But I wonder if there is a pro-capitalist analysis of Walmart that's not just caught up in all of the, you know, the language and vocabulary of Marxism, socialism, and everything, the way that they come in and critique things. I would be interested to hear a pro-capitalist argument criticizing Walmart so that I could just think about it a little bit. And I mean, one of the classic problems with capitalism, which has been recurrent, is monopolies. And so from very early in the history of modern capitalism, which you could, for the sake of the argument, take back to Adam Smith, Wealth of Nations, monopolies have been seen as something that's evil. And so, for example, when the King of England or the Queen gave a particular manufacturer of tea or jam or whatever a monopoly, a royal monopoly, that was seen as being something that was negative. So in communities of a certain size, if there's a Walmart there, does that constitute a monopoly? And here's another question. What is the quality of for example, of produce? I saw that, and I shop at Walmart all the time. So, I mean, I don't take this, take my, talking about this the wrong way, but, I read somewhere yesterday that Walmart was rated the second worst place to shop for produce. Now, why that would be, I don't know. And I don't think it was a scientific, you know, it wasn't a scientific study. It was just they had talked to a number, you know, polled a number of different people. So if you go to Albertsons or if you go to Safeway or any, you know, Kroger, Dixie, where, you know, all of these supermarkets across the country, do you get a better value? Do you get a better product than Walmart? I don't know. So I think it's worth talking about. There's a lot of frustration and anger at Walmart. There's a lot of huge, you know, it's a huge number of fans, 523-1450 to call in, by the way. Huge number of fans out there of Walmart. And it's easy to see why. You can go there and get anything you want and get it at a pretty good price. But, and, you know, all the stores are kind of laid out the same. And they do give extraordinary value on a lot of things. But, you know, you can't help but notice a lot of times the workers there don't seem the real thrilled. And I joked before that guys that were stocking at night seemed like, and the females seemed like zombies. But, and I got an angry phone call from somebody who worked for Walmart in management. Didn't identify himself, but he said, I didn't know what I was talking about. And I'm like, you know, I'm just walking in the store and looking over and seeing these people, you know, flogging this, you know, kind of moving product around. They just don't look happy. I don't know what else to say. I just think it could be just the amount of business that Walmart does. If you're working in that environment, having to deal with that many people a day, it could be unpleasant. I don't know. I mean, I've never been in that situation. Sometimes, though, it looks like Ellis Island with these. And I did have one experience that I think I don't believe that I talked about this, and this is going back a few months, but I had gone in at night to buy something, and there were only a couple of checkers. And, you know, I mean, I couldn't believe how many people there were. It was like a half of an hour, 15 minute, half an hour wait in line, whatever it was, probably not a half an hour, but an incredible wait in line. And I'm thinking, why, you know, you've got all these people in the store. Why not pull a couple of people off the floor to run a till until you can get through the, you know, this line of people? And, you know, I mean, I just from a common sense capitalistic vantage point, it seemed to me that for the number of people that looked at the line and then looked at, they had a couple of items in their hand or maybe 5 or 10 items, and they just shrugged and put their stuff down and walked out of the store, I can't imagine that it wouldn't be worth the store's investment to have a few more checkers. They would make it up immediately in the business that they were losing. But anyway. All right, so I'm going to do a little bit on this illegal story when I come back. 523-1450 to call in Kelly O'Connell Show. AM 1450, AM Las Cruces on KOBE. Take a little break here. This is Romeo and Juliet, Dire Straits. Be right back at 627 KOBE.
A love-struck Romeo, sing the streets of Serenade.
It is Kelly here, and we discussing this Walmart or what appears to be the possibility of a new Walmart coming into the
lock and load, people. We're going all in Valley, so. On woo-woo. Mark, pop us up a profile page. Susie, write us some posts.
So I want sponsored woos. I want targeted woos.
We need an ethnically ambiguous woo-woo mascot.
Dude. And international really covers all three.
Nah,
the question of more illegal immigrants coming to America and a lot of kids. And first of all, you've got to say that no matter what your opinion of the illegals is, you can't blame them for wanting to come in at a time when it would appear that they are on the verge of not only having the
public opinion surveys show terrible ratings on President Obama's immigration policy. One poll showed 46% blamed the Obama administration's policy for the surge of illegal immigrant children across the southern U.S. border. And a Gallup poll in June revealed two-thirds of Americans disagree with the president's handling of immigration policy. Alex Ware, The Washington Times.
The administration's what is their plan?
I still
what is
can't
their
believe
goal?
You're
what, why are they in
it's
favor?
It's a great mystery.
Now, hey, I know we've talked about this, and it's kind of been established that there's some possibilities out there. Number one possibility is that the administration at some level feels sorry for the people in there and their suffering and where they're living, et cetera. Another one, though, is to change the demographics of America for some reason, and which I would assume would make America more like Mexico, Central America, whatever.
I thought it was genius.
Another
Emily
one would be to change the voting habits of the people in, especially in red states like Arizona, Texas, to help the maybe the party in power right now to stay in power.
Illegal immigrant children across the southern U.S. border. And a Gallup poll in June revealed two-thirds of Americans.
To ruin America. But it is, whatever for whatever the reason, the administration is highly in favor of these people coming over and staying here. And there have been many, many stories that have been put out about the impact of the illegals on communities. And for instance, there are school districts up in Colorado where there are now more non-English speaking children than English speakers. And things like this are happening all across the United States. So,
yo, bro.
According to the Washington Times, the second wave of unaccompanied illegal immigrant children is begun.
Yo, bro.
Last month, 3,000 unaccompanied children
lost
the highest rates.
We're going
of last summer's
all in.
And it could be
Mark,
massive. I'm going to that it's going,
going to
be
all in. I want targeted Mark. We need an F profile. I want sponsored. I want targeted. We need an ethnically ambiguous woo woo mascot.
Dude.
You know, they're being taken to shelters. And the vast majority of them, from what I understand, despite whatever the government is saying, are not going to have to leave. So the vast majority of them, I think over 90-something, like 95%, 97% of the people will never go to their immigration.
Public opinion surveys show terrible ratings on President Obama's immigration policy. One poll showed 46% blamed the Obama administration's policy for the surge of illegal immigrant children across the southern U.S. border. And a Gallup poll in June revealed two-thirds of Americans disagree with the president's handling of immigration policy. Alex Blair, The Washington Times.
The first 6 months of the fiscal year. Through this point in 2014, they apprehended 28,000. So there's a couple of possibilities here, one of which is that there's less people crossing. Another one of which is that the policy of Homeland Security is now just to let them go.
On Easter Sunday may have been overcast, but thousands turned out to hear Pope Francis giving wishes
about world
mothers
affairs.
With young children.
Hope praise the nuclear agreement with
or
Iran.
Pardon me. Here's another part of this article, just as concerning is
Libya,
that whole
Yemen,
families,
Iraq, Nigeria, and
usually mothers
Germany,
with young children
Africa.
Who are crossing. There have been 13,000, almost 14,000 family units captured, down 30%. And quote, here is Jessica Vaughn from Policy Service Director at the Center for Immigration.
We're going all
Studies.
In on World War.
Show that the surge of illegals arrivals from Central America was never really over.
Susie, write us some posts.
Yes,
I want sponsors. I want targeted groups. We need an FFAM.
They
do
what World War II got. The idea that once you cross the border, it's only a matter of time before you become a resident, you become a citizen. Now, putting your politics aside, what do you think the long-term consequences will be?
You know, being in the national championship game, you know, I agree.
Policy is here that children from Central America
it's crazy. I mean,
be released in the U.S. rather than quickly return. So,
this team has really earned
the Congressional Research Service told Congress in March. Late March, 62% of the children failed to show up for their cases.
Really
and I think
game.
For adults, it's much higher than
that.
So, last year, the Obama administration blamed bad economies and violence in Honduras, El Salvador, and Guatemala for the surge, but later acknowledged that human traffickers were marketing the opportunity. So, from a law enforcement, a couple of things going on. You have coyotes bringing people across the border for pay. Along
so
with that,
good in
an enormous opportunity for
so
the cartels to
for
bring drugs across, and they say there's a lot
Utah
of these situations,
the game, they
from what I understand
for,
and from some of the people that I've talked to,
the whites
they will
the stage have not been too big for them. They
allow the
they
people
felt
to
like
be
they
caught
could sing their song
they
and do
the
their dance.
Over. But it's an enormous opportunity for the
really
cartels,
well.
And the cartels are involved in human trafficking. And so, and I think that's one thing that the administration has not admitted, which is that organized crime is involved with this. It's not just the story
Yo, bro,
of a bunch of oppressed people showing up and trying to get in here to make a better life. There is, I think, MS-13, the gang,
Flight Tracker, Twitter feed,
which is
Facebook,
supposed to be the most violent gang in the world. There are issues of health. Remember,
we're
going today for about 3 weeks with a different disease being brought across
forward.
The border. And there are, cartel drug issues and everything.
Susie, write it some posts. Keep up.
Download the 120 Sports app right now.
Targeted
I got one for you.
We need
guys.
An ethnically ambiguous.
Sort of had a little bit of a bold bait based on the vacated position, let's say, Adam Kastuji and Graham. On the defensive side of the ball. You don't see a lot of guys like that.
Some are able to get in. I think it's
although somewhat limited as a blocker.
Who try to
he had to take one. Who do you think is tougher to play?
I would have played the Vietnam.
So,
I just looked at the last 10 years of draft.
Anyway,
the elite defensive tackles go 2, 3, 4, 5.
There,
the best tight ends go 20, 30.
What
is a rare specialty
beyond, the most obvious issues. But it kind of makes you wonder if you could have a view of the United States in 50 years, what would the populace look like? And we're being told that the populace is becoming darker, is becoming more ethnic. And so what is that all going to look like? What is going to be the impact on policy and what is going to be the impact on, the political stance? And it would be fascinating to know this. So here's a little more Dire Straits, and seems like my computer's sticking a little bit. Let's just go to break at 6:40. Kelly O'Connell Show, AM 1450, AM Las Cruces, KOBE 523-1450 to call, and we'll be right back.
Everybody low.
Thank me. Thanks
to savings. It's Kelly here. It's 6:42.
Geico ad.
And
because it's already over. Geico. 15 minutes.
insurance could save you
50%
or more on
the,
car insurance.
The legals that you should be aware of. And I also just found an interesting clip that Carly Fiorina, who was the former head of Hewlett-Packard and ran for, I think she ran for the
Senate. You know, Glenn,
in,
you will remember that you and I
that
chatted when I was running for the Senate in California in 2010. And I talked about this water situation through that entire Senate campaign. It is a man-made disaster.
Bad policy
this
for the last
California
20 years. That's
is a classic
claim.
Case. Of liberals being willing to sacrifice other people's lives and livelihoods at the altar
of
their ideology.
Said about the,
it is
illegal
and
immigration. I'll
and
get that just
you
a second.
Have agricultural land in California, the most
this.
Productive agricultural
yeah,
land in the world,
right
has been destroyed. And by the way, isn't that interesting? You know, Glenn, you were.
This is from Glenn Beck, the Glenn Beck Show right here. Let me play this for you. But imagine that. Here's the claim. If California had taken care of its water issues better over the last 20 years, that they wouldn't be in this massive drought because they would have full lakes and reservoirs. Check this out. And aquifers.
Remember that you and I chatted when I was running for the Senate in California in 2010. And I talked about this water situation through that entire Senate campaign. It is a man-made disaster. This California is a classic case of liberals being willing to sacrifice other people's lives and livelihoods at the altar of their ideology. It is a tragedy. And you have agricultural land in California, the most productive agricultural land in the world, has been destroyed. And by the way, President Obama goes out to California a little over a year ago, calls it a tragedy of global warming and hands out money to a food bank. This is all about politics and policy, and it is liberal environmentalists that have brought us this tragedy.
So as I drive down in the farming section, the Central Valley there in California, as I'm driving through there, I see these farms that are just becoming wasteland. And
that's right.
There are signs everywhere. This is Congress. This is Congress. This is Congress. What should Congress be doing?
Well, you know, it's interesting. So on top of the environmentalists saying that they can't build any new water storage or conveyance facilities, in the late 2000s, Congress also weighed in, specifically Barbara Boxer and Dianne Feinstein, an environmentalist, and said, you know, in addition to all of that, we're going to protect a fish called the smelt. And that permitted Washington to manage the little bit of water that those farmers had, literally. So it's Washington that determines that farmers only get 10% of their allocation, all to protect the fish. You know, in California, fish and frogs and flies are really important. Far more important, apparently, than the 40% unemployment rates in certain parts of the Central Valley. So the Senate and the president could waive some of those water restrictions. They have been asked to do so, and they've refused to do so.
Carly, what is the biggest problem in the United States? If you could only wave a wand and cure one thing, what would it be?
Government has grown so huge, so powerful, so costly, so complex. It is literally crushing the life out of this country. It's crushing small and family-owned businesses, which are the economic engine of our nation. It is crushing possibilities out of people's lives by entangling them in a web of dependence from which they cannot escape. The weight, the cost, and the power of government are literally crushing the potential of the nation. We must, absolutely must, get government under control, which means reducing its size and its power and its complexity in really fundamental ways. And that is why I am seriously considering running for president and will make a final decision, you know, over the next month or so. Because,
well, I mean, and even if you had the right person come into the presidency, would they be able to affect changes? But I think that if you think of the amount of ideology, the amount of leftism in the in this current administration behind policies, and you know, like global warming, we have found a way to get out of our energy crisis despite the government taking millions of acres out of production. And I've got a phone call here. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
It's Patty Riley.
Citizen journalist, what's up?
I got contacted last night by LaRouche PAC, and there's some concern about this west of the Mississippi, I guess you want to call it that. They're trying to get people to wake up, okay? It's a very big concern. I mean, you're probably Texas on, they're really trying to push people to awaken. And there's a big concern because we've been heavily brainwashed out here. One is through the food, and the produce from Walmart is made, is produced by Monsanto. Does anybody know what that is?
It is a chemical company.
It sure is. It's a Dow chemical company. But they also, they make Roundup, and it's they're using it to also genetically modify our food. Okay, so I'm letting everybody know. I have a conference call Thursday night with these people. The world is waiting for all of us to wake up in the United States, because they would like to take this tyranny over.
All
I'm
right,
just saying,
Buddy.
The world is waiting. The world is waiting on us.
Hey, I'm
thank you
CNN
very much
now.
For the call,
you're
and have
CNN.
A good day. Okay, folks. So let's take a little break here. I have a little more information on the immigrant situation. It's 6:49. Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450 to call in on the AM Las Cruces show, and almost 6:50.
There's nothing. Last year, 68 Democrats, Republicans, and Independents.
For the public's help to combat a new and dangerous medicine.
It is Kelly here, 6:52. And you heard Patty. Now, the LaRouche organization, Lyndon LaRouche, I think he's still alive anyway, but this was a group that was considered by a lot of people to be, I don't know, racist or whatever. But they were kind of a pro-America group. And Lyndon LaRouche ran for Congress or president every year. All right, so people are upset. Look, I mean, if you didn't have to get into an ideological debate over all of this stuff and could just have a discussion over whether it's good, better, or worse for America to bring in all these illegals, what would your decision? If you were the president, what would you decide? What percentage of the American population would decide to bring in a lot of illegals and just force them into communities? Just curious. Here is from the Washington Examiner. Poll, yes to more aggressive deportations, no to welfare citizenship for kids of illegals. Obama versus Obama.
When I took office, I committed to fixing this broken immigration system. I taught constitutional law for 10 years, I take the Constitution very seriously. Last year, 68 Democrats, Republicans, and Independents came together to pass a bipartisan bill in the Senate. I believe in the Constitution, and I will obey the Constitution of the United States. We're not going to use signing statements as a way of doing an end run around Congress. I continue to believe that the best way to solve this problem is by working together to pass that kind of common sense law. But until that happens, there are actions I have the legal authority to take as president. I know some here wish that I could just bypass Congress and change the law myself. First, we'll build on our progress at the border with additional resources for our law enforcement personnel. But that's not how democracy works. Second, I'll make it easier and faster for high-skilled immigrants, graduates, and entrepreneurs to stay and contribute to our economy. Believe me, the idea of doing things on my own is very tempting. Third, we'll take steps to deal responsibly with the millions of undocumented immigrants who already live in our country. You know, I'm the President of the United States. I'm not the Emperor of the United States. So we're going to offer the following deal. If you've been in America for more than 5 years, if you have children who are American citizens or legal residents, if you register, pass a criminal background check, and you're willing to pay your fair share of taxes, you'll be able to apply to stay in this country temporarily without fear of deportation. If we start broadening that, then essentially I would be ignoring the law in a way that I think would be very difficult to defend legally. So that's not an option. To those members of Congress who question my authority to make our immigration system work better, or question the wisdom of me acting where Congress has failed, I have one answer. Pass a bill.
All right. So anyway, the got a phone call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
It's Patty again. I'd like to clarify something you said. Mr. LaRouche is still alive. He's
right.
In his 80s. And he and his wife are really doing this movement. He is not racist. This is for humanity.
That's Patty, that's what a lot of people have claimed over the years. Where does that come from?
Probably from the people at the top. They tried to take down Kissinger. His group, he did. Back in the 70s. Now, this is when I was little. I don't remember any of this, and I have read some about it. She told me about this last night, the lady that works for him.
Right.
Okay, so Kissinger's behind this stuff again. Okay, he should have been arrested the first time. So should have Soros and Brzezinski and all of them. However, they're trying again. Mr. LaRouche was arrested and held as a political prisoner, I believe, by our government.
Oh, okay.
He was trying to, in the 90s. I'm just letting you all know.
I appreciate that. I'm just about out of time. I wanted to get one more thing in here. Thank you, Patty.
That's fine.
Okay,
you're
thanks
welcome.
A lot. Bye-bye. All right, so I've got one more story for you here. Border Patrol unsuspecting truck drivers finding immigrants in their trucks all over the place. Check this out from valleycentral.com.
Well, now to a story you'll see only on 4. The Border Patrol is asking for the public's help to combat a new and dangerous method undocumented immigrants are using to get smuggled past checkpoints undetected. Our Ashley Custer is in the Falfurrias with the story you'll see only on Action 4 News.
Falfurrias checkpoint is one of the busiest checkpoints in the country with regard to seizures and apprehension. In addition to that, inspect more than 8,000 vehicles per day.
So far this year, the Border Patrol has apprehended over 7,000 undocumented immigrants at this checkpoint alone. And now agents are seeing more of these immigrants take bold and dangerous measures to travel undetected through these checkpoints.
We don't want anybody to die or get hurt or get seriously injured.
Over the last couple of days, there were 5 incidents where agents found people stashed away in the small upper airflow compartment of big rig trucks.
Tuesday on the 31st, we had a group of 7 illegal immigrants, which is that's quite a few illegal immigrants to be hiding in the back of some of these air dams. We've seen another 4 cases since then here at this checkpoint.
Border Patrol RGB Sector spokesperson Omar Zamora says they're starting to average 2 or 3 of these cases every day.
All right, so that's going on now. Here's from your polling. 62% told pollsters that the U.S. is not aggressive enough in deporting illegals. and just 15% believe they're too aggressive. And most people in the United States do not want anchor babies. They don't want the kids naturalized. They want people sent back. Here's Dire Straits to take you out. We're coming in the second hour. I'm going to have a Bob Endlich in talk a little bit about the weather, but we're going to talk a little bit more about this issue. We'll be back after the break on the hour. AM 1450 KOBE, Kelly O'Connell Show.
With a love song that he made, playing the streetlight, steps out of the shade, says something like, you and me,
sure.
Baby, how about
it? Sure. Sure, that sounds good.
Hey, it's Julio. He nearly gave me a heart attack.
All right.
He's underneath the window. Hey, Eli, my boyfriend.
All right, I'm going to do some local news first, okay? Good morning, it's Kelly. It's 7:06, and welcome to AM Las Cruces on KOBE. We've got Bob Endlich in here. We're going to be talking a little bit about the weather later in this hour. But first, let's recap what we talked about last hour, which was there was a championship gained by Duke and Wisconsin in men's basketball. Wisconsin was poised to win. They were, I think, up by 9. And I think at the end of the game, you just had to look at what was happening out there and say there was a little bit better coaching from Mike Krzyzewski, or however you pronounce his name. I think he's got 5 national championships. So he's an elite coach. He is gaining on, I think he's number 2 in wins in history. And he's not really, I mean, he's not a young guy, but he's not ancient. So he's probably got a shot at breaking that. All right. A little bit of local news, and we did talk about the illegal situation, and I wanted to ask you, is there a public policy, let's forget left and right, Democrat and Republican, is there a public policy argument to be made for bringing a bunch of illegal people in here from South America, from Mexico, whatever, or from other countries? And the policy of America has been, you have a better education, you have more money in your pocket, we'll let you in, we'll make it easy. We want people that can contribute to the economy at a high level, open businesses and such. That's part of the visa policy. Is there an argument, though, to be made to bring in tens of thousands of new immigrants each year that may not have the education, that probably don't have the language skills? And what would the public policy argument be? Now, you can claim, if you're on the left, if you're progressive, to have a kind of a belief in some sort of an abstract theory of justice, or kind of this thing that we associate with, I guess, maybe having a vision or trying to think of the right way to put it. There was this claim that we needed to transform the country. We're going to start changing the country. And so on the left, the progressives could make an argument that we need to do it. But what's the public policy argument for it? Forget left and right, progressive, conservative, or whatever. What is the just common sense, bread and butter, logical argument for bringing a lot of people that are not at that high level, people that are maybe at a lower level in terms of what they can contribute to the economy, what they can bring in terms of investment, their language skills and their education? What's the public policy argument for that? Now, I've heard some. I haven't really been persuaded, but anyway. The Regents do approve the tuition increase, $72 more per semester for undergrads. And NMSU Board of Regents on Monday met and voted 4-1 to approve a 3% tuition increase. Fees are unchanged and making for a 2.4% blended increase for the 2015-2016 academic year. And Gary Carruthers, President, Angela Throneberry, University Senior Vice President for the Administration and Finance, proposed the idea, and it was passed. And so Regent Kerry Mitchell said, raising tuition is not something that we're considering lightly. And so higher education is pretty spendy around the United States, and I've seen I've heard a lot of arguments that we need to be decreasing tuition across the United States, but until that happens, I guess we're kind of caught in this cycle. All right. So the site for the Walmart, it hasn't been announced, first of all, as a Walmart, but the site where they think that a Walmart's coming in, where there's a people who work on these things, the contractors that are used for Walmart, they are not. I got somebody calling me on my cell phone who's a listener, so it kind of makes me wonder if I'm on the air, but it looks like I am. But anyway, the site for that is Rob is trying to call me on the cell phone for some reason. Maybe this is Rob. Is this Rob?
This is Rob.
Rob, if I'm talking, what makes you think I can pick up the cell phone?
I didn't mean to call the cell phone.
Oh, all right. Okay,
are you yelling at me in the morning?
No, but I could be if that's the kind of thing you're into.
Oh, beat me, please. Hey, listen. So you were asking earlier, why bring in so many
give me,
people?
Rob, I want a public policy argument. Throw out Republican, throw out Democrat. I want a common sense argument that everybody can understand. Public policy, how does this benefit America?
Okay, I'm not speaking for any party, but it's a stated goal of the UN that no country will have a white majority population.
Really?
And yeah, and the way to do that is to infiltrate as many non-whites as possible.
So where did they say this?
In Agenda 21.
I didn't know it had anything racial in there.
Oh yeah, Agenda 21 is huge, and see, their view is that whatever committee came up with that in the UN is that white people are the cause of all of the strife, all of the poverty, and all of the wars in the world. And that if no country has a white majority population, then those things will go away.
Well, in a related note from InfoWars, I've got an article here that says, United Nations, and we got a video here, a UN climate change official says we should make every effort to depopulate the planet. I think that they would like to get it down to 500 million. I know, and I mean, I've written some articles and I wrote some stuff for Glenn Beck on Agenda 21, but I did never notice that there was a racial element in that.
Yeah, it's pretty hush-hush, and you're not going to hear it mentioned on TV, you know, people talking about it because... Well, it's just an uncomfortable thing to have said or to be talking about, you know?
Yeah, well, so you're saying that the president is just transparently motivated by Agenda 21?
Well, I'm sure he's of the feeling of the people who wrote that. You know what I mean? I mean, I'm sure he's been educated the same as those people were.
Question, I guess, would be at some level, I mean, does the president have a racial view of life? And I think that there is some indication through Eric Holder and some of the things that the president had said himself that he does seem to have, he does comment on race a lot. And it seems like the Justice Department was racialized.
You know, it seems like he's overcompensating because he's half white, you know?
Rob, he's milk chocolate. Easter was his holiday, so. All right, so that's food for thought. Anything else?
No, that's it.
All right, Matt, Rob, thanks for the call, and have a good day. All right. I got a little clip here from the Climate One. Here's the United Nations talking about depopulation. And I'm going to have a Bob Endlich come on in a minute. We're going to talk about stuff related to this. Funny enough, Bob comes on a couple of times a month and talks about weather stuff. And it's all related. In the minds of progressives, capitalism is cooking the planet. It's killing us. The global warming and the use of capitalism to strip the planet of its forestry and you know, ruin the potential for humans in the future to have a good life. Funny enough, in the last 10 years, an article that was just published that the amount of foliage, the forests or greenery on the earth has increased quite a bit over the last 10 years. But here's from the Climate One United Nations discussion, depopulation is in the future.
as engines of the economy and often on the front lines of climate impacts, and also in terms of water and food stress that's the result of climate, both in terms of the challenges as well as the solutions.
Very interesting that you asked that, Greg.
Just before we go on, this is the Executive Secretary of the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change.
I've often said climate has the face of a woman. And the reason for that is women in developing countries are absolutely at the nexus in between food, water, and energy. They are basically responsible for this, okay? They need to produce the food. They need to gather the firewood or whatever else they need for energy. And they need to go somewhere and get their water. And they're the ones that keep the families alive because of their responsibilities on these three. And if there are any three factors that are directly affected by climate, it's food, water, and energy. And so women, particularly in developing countries, are really at the forefront of negative climate impacts. They are the ones that bear the brunt. In some African countries, the food is 85% produced by women, 85% produced by women. At the same time, what is very interesting is that women, if given the necessary tools, can really be little ants of change, okay? Think of women in developing countries as a huge network, a huge ant colony that can really bring about the necessary change. Because these are the women that will make the decision about how am I going to cook? Am I going to continue to cook? I'll give you a very scary fact. 50% of women around the world, 50% still cook on open fires. You know what an open fire is? It is three stones, three pieces of wood, and a pot on top. 50% of women around the world, that is immoral. That is immoral in the year 2013, because what it means is women have to walk long distances to go, and every day longer distances to go and get the firewood. Along the path, they are raped, robbed, or something else. Then they have to put up with all the fire, because they're the ones that cook, with their children. So the fire produces all of this smoke, and the women are the ones that have respiratory problems and their children because of the cooking like this. And then the men still complain about the recipe, right?
All right, so this comment is about two more minutes into this discussion, but I'll come back and play it for you. I need to take a break right here. We're going to come back. I'll play this little bit of this clip. Depopulation. What does depopulation mean? And how would it be achieved? Depopulation, obviously, the radical reduction in the case of the United Nations, the global warming movement, radically reduce the number of people. How would you do that? Just a question. 523-1450 to Colin Kelly O'Connell Show, 719 on AM Las Cruces, KOBE, 523-1450. We're going to come back, listen to a little more of that clip, and then talk to Bob Endlich about some of this stuff. Bob is a climatologist, I guess you'd call him, and
urologist, climatologist,
whatever you want to call yourself.
Earth scientist,
whatever you want to call yourself. Here's a little Dire Straits Espresso Love, Kelly O'Connell, and 720. We'll be right back to dig into this huge, huge topic. It's Kelly. Who's this?
Okay, I don't want to go on the air, but the asset seizure forfeiture law that Martinez is sitting on, it's been passed by both houses.
Hey, I'm on the air. Hello, I'm on the air. You want to bring it on the air?
Not really. I just want you to look into it.
Hey, it's Kelly here, and good morning to you. I just had a call on the asset and forfeiture law. And so the lady said that she didn't want to go on the air, and so I had to basically cut her off because I, you know, she didn't want to talk, and so on the air. And so in forfeiture law, Governor Martinez is sitting on it, not signing it, according to this this lady. So if you have anything to say about that, feel free to call in. All right, here is from this woman from the United Nations. Now listen to this. My question for you is, are you willing, when you listen to people, are you willing to follow down the line of thinking that people are talking about? And, you know, the issue here is, if you're into let's say you're one of your pet theories is global warming. You believe in it. People who disagree with it, you find them to be incredible. You find them to be silly. And you want to advocate for it. You want the government to invest in anti-global warming laws. But how far would you be willing to go down that trail? And my question for you is, would you be willing to support depopulation? It has long been said it is a matter of faith that the planet is overpopulated. And whether it is or is not, you might believe that it is. Would you be willing to depopulate, get rid of possibly billions of people, and how would you do it? Here is this lady from the United Nations. I'll tell you one thing. This woman seems to be an extremely angry person, but here we go. She's been talking about how women are mistreated by cooking on open fires, half the women in the world.
Particularly in developing countries, that women really are starting already, but will continue to take the lead in change.
A related issue is fertility rates and population. A lot of people in energy and environmental circles don't want to go near that because it's politically charged. It's not their issue. But isn't it true that stopping the rise in population would be one of the biggest levers in driving the rise in greenhouse gases? Is that
I mean, we all know we expect 9 billion, right, by 2050. So, yes, obviously less people would exert less pressure on the natural resources. And that's
– So is 9 billion a foregone conclusion that's like baked in, done, not going to – no way to change that?
Well, there again, there's pressure in the system to go toward that. We can definitely change those, right? We can definitely change those numbers. And we really should make every effort to change the numbers because we are already today already exceeding the planetary carrying capacity today, to say nothing of adding more population that is going to really overextend our capacity. So, yes, we should do everything possible, but we cannot fall into the very simplistic opinion of saying just by curtailing population, then we've solved the problem. It is not an either or. It is an and also.
So you're going to bring down the population. How are you going to do it? According to what those people were saying, you could come up with a lot of different ideas. Anyway, Bob Endlich, good morning to you.
Good morning. And I think I've got an answer to that young lady from the United Nations, the angry young woman. And it's very obvious if you study what's going on in the earth. The poor places of the earth are the ones where the people, you know, the women carry the water and gather the firewood and all that behavior that that she's complaining about.
I know the answer. What's your answer?
Well, the answer is development.
Development.
When you have inexpensive energy sources, people don't have to burn firewood. I mean, you can use electricity. And those societies are much cleaner.
Not only that, but there's a natural propensity for whatever reason that the rate of birth goes down in developed.
True.
You don't have to go out and figure out a way to get rid of billions of people if we brought in the capitalism and really the rule of law in a lot of these places, they would grow. They wouldn't strip the land of, like you say, of wood and resources, and the population would become wealthier. They wouldn't have to live off open fires.
And they make many fewer babies. All you have to do is go to Europe and to look at some of the policies in Europe. In Germany, there are so few German kids being born that they have to offer a subsidy. It's called Kindergeld, gold for children. It's a subsidy so that people will have children because they are highly industrialized and it's very, very clean.
Well,
let me give you an example.
Don't forget one thing, though, Bob, that you've got this family policy, you know, this birth control and abortion has also cut into their ability to sustain a population.
Well, that's true. I was going to give you an example. In Germany, they take very good care of land, and the farmer's got his field. If the farmer takes his farm implement onto the street, he can't drive a vehicle with muddy tires to clean the tires off before they go onto the road to avoid spreading mud and stuff like that. They are very, very careful of the land. So, and all you have to do is get on an airplane and fly from, say, El Paso to Washington, D.C., and look over vast areas of the Carolinas, vast areas of Arkansas, and you can see we are nowhere close to capacity.
Carrying capacity, I read one time, was 36 billion, but for the planet. And some people, you know, people will immediately shriek, why in God's name do you want 36 billion people here? Well, we don't have that many people here. But the idea that babies need to be aborted because we're about to reach the carrying capacity, which seems to be the implication of this lady here, that's just not logic. It's not supported by the facts or the logic. You can go across vast regions of the whole world and find unpopulated areas.
Well, certainly. And you can go down to southern parts of Mexico. Now, I'm not talking about the northern parts of Mexico, which are desert. But if you go down to, say, Chiapas or right across the border into Guatemala, you can see areas that are quite fertile where they're still using slash-and-burn agriculture. They just go out and chop the woods down so that they can grow some corn. You can go to like Lake Atitlan. It's a beautiful lake in Guatemala, and see women coming down to gather the water to carry off to their individual villages. They don't have, like it was in the days of Columbus, the only difference is that they have plastic jugs to carry the water now.
Well, this lady is getting furious. I mean, just watching her, I mean, she's just scary to watch. But I mean, this idea, I just can't help but pick up this feeling that, you know, she feels like it's capitalism that has caused all these women to cook over open fires. It's the lack of capitalism and rule of law that has kept their countries from being developed.
Well, I think that's absolutely correct. And I think the data shows it. It's the Western societies where the population growth is down, and certainly the ability of people to care for the environment goes up as the ready availability of inexpensive energy like electricity. Let's just look at New Mexico 100 years ago compared to today. Suppose someone had an appendix out. You know, you'd have to go to a cowboy doctor and not have electricity. Look what we have today.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so what are we going to come back and talk about? We're going to talk a little bit about the drought in California.
Let's talk about the drought in California and what Carly Fiorina was talking about in the last segment.
All right, so here's a little more espresso love. Kelly O'Connell, 7:32 a.m. Las Cruces on KOBE. That's 523-1450 to call in, and we will be right back. Thank you. it's Kelly here, and I've got Bob Endlich, and Bob, who is comes on and talks about weather-related stuff, had asked me if he wanted me to, or if I wanted him to, come and talk about the claims that Carly Fiorina made about how California has handled its drought. And I said, let's do it, because we're in drought situation in New Mexico for the last few years, last 5 years or so. Texas had an extraordinary drought that may or may not be over, but it hit hard the cattle industry. We hear all the time that Las Vegas and Phoenix are overtaxing their water resources. California is an extraordinary drought. It's all throughout the West. It doesn't appear to be going away anytime soon. And then you hear Carly Fiorina turn around and say, this is caused by government incompetence. What's your reaction?
Well, there are about three things I could say about that. The first thing is that the periods of rainfall and drought in the West are controlled by the water, the temperature of the water immediately adjacent to North America and South America. In the 1980s and the 1990s, that water was abnormally warm. It's called the Pacific Decadal Oscillation. So we were PDO warm. And you'll remember in the mid-1980s, Lake Mead was full. You'll recall
absolutely
that there was so much snow in the mountains that the Great Salt Lake rose so high they had to close part of Interstate 15 as it goes, you know, north of Salt Lake City there. And so we thought that those days would go on forever. That heavy rainfall also affected New Mexico. But now, late in the 1990s, we realized that there is this oscillation. It's called the Pacific Decadal Oscillation. And it's about 60 years long. So when the millennium changed, we went into Pacific Decadal Oscillation cold. That 60-year cycle experience in New Mexico mirrors the drought of the 1950s. We've had Elephant Butte Lake for about 100 years now, and we know it was way low in the 50s, and then it got pretty high in the 80s, and now it's down low again. It's because we've gone to PDO cold, and that is also affecting California. Now, you mentioned,
what is PDO cold? It sounds like something related to children.
Not quite. It is where, and I didn't explain that well, you're right. So it's where the water immediately off the coasts of North America and South America are cold, abnormally cold instead of abnormally warm. And when that happens, then there is dry in the West, especially in the Mountain West. Now, that's a 60-year cycle. Now, beyond that or within that, we have we're either in El Nino or La Nina or one that's sort of neutral. Well, let's talk about that. El Nino is a situation where we get abnormally warm water next to the Americas, but it only lasts for a year or so. And that's followed by where it goes from abnormally warm with a wet west to abnormally cold. And then we have a drought. When we go into what the opposite of El Nino, it's called La Nina.
So what causes droughts?
Well, first of all, in the Mountain West, let's just talk about the Mountain West, talk about geography. We have 800 miles between us and normally the winds are out of the west. So the storms have to travel the coast ranges in California and all of the basin and range. So we right here in Las Cruces, in south of Las Cruces, are in the largest desert in North America. It's called the Chihuahuan Desert. And then just go one state to the west, and they're in the Sonoran Desert. And you go a state west of that, and you get into the Mojave Desert. And if you go up to Utah, that's the Great Basin Desert. So we have four deserts in North America. And the reason that it's desert is because as those storms cross from west to east most of the year, dried out by
by going over those multiple mountain ranges. And anyone who's driven, even on the interstates, you're going over those mountain ranges. It's 800 miles. Now, the salvation, if there is one, is in the summer when the circulation pattern changes and we get winds out of the southeast. It's called the monsoon. It means there's a seasonal change in the wind from the west to the east, and that brings moisture-laden air from the Gulf of Mexico all the way to here to New Mexico and also to Arizona.
All right, so let's take a little break here and come back and talk about this California situation, your opinion of Carly Fiorina's statements about mismanagement. Talking to Bob Endlich right now, and he is a climatologist. We will be back at 7:40 a.m. Las Cruces, KOBE, Kelly O'Connell Show, 523-1450 to call in.
Be careful scratching. You could get a sliver in your head, in your finger. Just joking. Are you going to be able to pass the test? I'm about to go back on the air. Okay. All right. I'm about to go back on the air, so let me probably catch up with you. Okay. Thank you.
It's Kelly here, and I've got Bob Endlich, and we're talking about this drought in California and the claims, the outrageous claims by Carly Fiorina that it is caused, the problems that are caused by mismanagement. People hear something like that, and they say, give me a break. It's obviously the problem is there's not enough rain. What's your reaction?
There are a number of things we can say about that. First of all, we've been monitoring the rainfall in California for about 115 years now. And we can go back and look, and there have been five or so periods in the past where it's been as dry in terms of rainfall down where people take weather observations and maintain them. So this drought is not especially nasty in terms of its intensity based on the rain gauge data. On the other hand, up where there's no rain gauges in the Sierra, there has been a definite lack of snow. So there is a point to the fact that this is an extraordinary drought. There are what we call proxy data. Proxy data are things like tree rings and sediment cores and things like that that gives us an indication of what the climate was in the past. And in the recent past, say in the last 1,000 years, there have been two periods where we've had mega droughts in the neighborhood of like 200 years. And we've had those also here in New Mexico. The point I was trying to make to Dr. Gutzler when he was here a couple weeks ago, he's a climatologist from the University of New Mexico. I think warmer is wetter because certainly the tree ring data.
Interesting. So that means if it's warmer, let me just jump to the conclusion here. You got more moisture in the air.
That's true. And all you have to do is go back in the little ice age and see the punishing droughts. And if you look at the historical records for the Rio Grande, and there's a fellow named Neil Ackerley out in Silver City who has published several reports. They're in the Mexico Water Resources Research Institute from NMSU. They're clearly available online. You can see that the droughts we have now ain't nothing compared
to
the way.
All right, let me ask you a question that may be in people's minds and might be a silly question, but is there anything that humans being that human beings do or can do that can affect rain.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, you're talking to a climate criminal. I used to seed clouds to make it rain on the Ho Chi Minh Trail in the Vietnam War.
Did could you tell if it worked?
Oh, we know for sure it worked.
How do you know?
Oh, you know, you can tell. You can see what we did is we flew C-130s into cumulus clouds with silver iodide cartridges that were sort of like flares, and we dispensed the silver iodide. And what the silver iodide does is it turns supercooled water and freezes it. When that happens, the latent heat diffusion is released, and you get buoyancy to the cloud almost immediately, maybe within about 3 minutes. So you can punch this thing in, and you can see the cloud respond to it. And you might have a cloud that's going up to, say, 27 or 28,000 feet, and you add that additional buoyancy by seeding it. You can see it break through the inversion. It'll go higher, last longer.
All right, all right. So why aren't we seeding clouds over California, or are we?
We are not. There is some. Well, let me back up. I am not aware of any. Now, I am. I have looked, and there are some people who put silver iodide in clouds in eastern New Mexico and into Texas using the same technique that we use, and also I think up in South Dakota. And in the wintertime, there was for a number of years a silver iodide dispensing system at the surface that claimed to increase the amount of snowfall in the San Juan Mountains by maybe 10%, 15%. And there are still discussions ongoing about that.
All right. I've got an article here from the Daily Mail UK. Can Russia control weather? Climate researcher says CIA fears hostile nations are triggering floods and droughts. CIA chiefs fear hostile nations trying to manipulate the world's weather. Academic has told of mysterious phone calls asking whether foreign countries could be triggering droughts or flooding. CIA is believed to have helped fund a major report on geoengineering. Now, anything to that? Is it possible?
Well, certainly. There is a story that Bill Gates has, he thinks that we are catastrophically warming. We are not. It was warmer 1,000 years ago and 2,000 years ago globally here in New Mexico. Clearly, there was significant rainfall in the Roman warm period here in New Mexico. We have what we call proxy data to show that.
Okay.
But we are not warmer than we were, say, 2,000 years ago.
But the Russians could be.
The Russians have a history of modifying clouds and enhancing rainfall with artillery shells. We flew C-130s. They would dump artillery shells with this silver iodide in it to reduce the incidence of hail.
All right. So what, in theory, just briefly, could Russia do to cause a drought here?
I don't think they have any chance of doing that.
All right. Folks, we'll take a little break here. Talking to Bob Endlich about the weather, whether the government has anything to do with the catastrophic drought or the management of it in California. Here is, in the meantime, a crazy Indian goat milking prank. Kelly O'Connell, KOBE AM Las Cruces at 7:48. We will be right back. And I don't think goat milk has any attachment to rain or drought either, but we'll find out.
Hello?
Hello, my friend. How are you doing?
We're doing pretty good. I can hear you better now.
Oh, me too, my friend. Before telephone, not God, but now telephone God. Okay, I want to tell you, I saw your advertisement on the Craig listing, right? Do you make a post?
Yes. Yes, I do. That Ford XLT extended cab?
No, I am about the goat milk, right? Goat?
You're calling about which car?
The goat milk. You have a goat?
Oh, a goat? No, I was trying to find some goat milk.
I am, yes, sir. I have goat milk. I have many goat.
Oh, you do? Okay. Well, good deal. Yeah.
All right. Do you have experience with the goat milking, right?
No, I've milked a goat. I've milked
cows when I was real young and a boy, but I haven't milked a goat. I don't guess there's much difference in milking a goat.
No, but my friend, it is a lot different, you know. It is very different species. You have to care very nice, goat. You cannot, goat pulling, not goat.
Oh, okay. Well.
Okay, but I tell you, but can you explain to me how, if you were to have goat in front of you right now, how you milk? Can you tell me? So I can know if you are.
Well, I would just try to milk it like a cow. I don't really know.
But it's kind of, hamliya, skamliya, laskrila, teat, right?
I'm sorry, what?
I'm telling you, you know, you have to get the goat and you have to pull hapskriya. The teat, right? Can you pull the teat? Do you know how to pull the teat?
No, sir, I don't.
Okay, maybe.
It is Kelly here. Good morning to you. It's about 7:54 on AM Las Cruces, Kelly O'Connell Show, KOBE. And got Bob and look here now. Bob, we just got a few more minutes left, but
okay, let's just talk a little bit about the flow in the Rio Grande and rainfall in New Mexico.
All right.
We have data from near the ice caves that's been published by the Tree Ring Lab at the University of Arizona. Those people are clearly world class. So this information was published a couple of years ago in the New York Times, and it shows these periods of rainfall and drought, these what I call the Pacific Decadal Oscillation, those patterns. And it's very obvious that in the 1980s we had more rainfall than in the last 2,000 years. It's obvious that the 20th century was the wettest in the last 2,000 years. And in the middle of that 20th century, we had this significant drought of the 1950s. But the 20th century essentially was pretty predictable. If you go back into history, and looking at both those tree ring data and the data from the gauges, the Ottawa gauge near Santa Fe, and there was another one just north of Elephant Butte, San Marcial. Those data show the stream flow. So we can relate the stream flow to the tree ring data. And back 100 years ago, 200 years ago, 300 years ago, the variability between the wet years and the dry years was much more wild than it is now. We don't know why the 20th century has been relatively modest in its behavior. So even though people are calling this unprecedented drought, no, sir, that's not the case. And just go back to the ruins at near Mountaineer at Abo. That was settled. Yeah, that mission was established in 1620. It was refurbished in 1640. It had to be abandoned at 1675 because in the late 1600s, there was this absolutely punishing drought, and people had to retreat out of New Mexico and go back to Mexico. It's in the historical records.
Interesting.
And you see, these things that we were talking about, like we're talking about going after wood for firewood.
Yeah.
The early Army reports said, we got to Albuquerque, and there's no cottonwoods within 20 miles of the river because the Mexicans have stripped it bare. That's in the first years of the Anglos coming It's in the records.
All right. So anyway, let's. When are you coming back on?
Well, in a couple weeks, if that's okay.
That's fine. Thanks for coming in today. Very interesting stuff.
There's just so much that's fascinating, and it's the history also feeds into it.
Just scratching the surface. All right. So a few more stories for you. Some of it is weird news, but Mike is right to be worried. The radiation from Fukushima has reached the shores up in Canada. It's going to be hitting here. A mother high on basalt stabs a family dog with a kitchen knife because it was possessed by demons. Ashley Duty attacked her pet dog Trixie last Sunday. After taking basalts, the dog lived, but it's up in Maine, so she's not allowed to have dogs anymore. Deborah Ann Burns of Lakely, Florida, stabbed her boyfriend. They were arguing about money, and he came over and passed wind in her face. She didn't appreciate that. She responded with a knife. Thai police were forced to shoot the tires out of a confused American tourist car in Banglamong, Thailand. The American tourist female crashed into 13 different vehicles, including a motorcycle. A motorcyclist she sent to the hospital because she said she panicked going down the wrong side of the street. And so she was just, I guess, hitting cars right and left. And they finally had to shoot her tires out.
They drive on the left in Thailand. So
isn't that funny?
Get confused.
And so they had an angry mob. They wanted to kill her. And anyway, a 100-year-old man had killed wife with an axe and then self in Elmwood Park, New Jersey. And he did it as she slept. Not clear why. He committed murder-suicide. But don't say everything is caused by guns. Kelly O'Connell, thanks for tuning in. And I'm going to take you out with some Jackson Browne on the piano, live piano. Have a great day. Kelly O'Connell Show, KOBE. Ciao. Kelly, who's this?
Hey, Kelly, it's John, your tow truck driving buddy.
Hey, I couldn't get to the phone. I was just sitting down to the piano.
Yeah, well, you're an awesome piano player.
Oh, thanks, man. So what's up?
Well, I just had, I was wondering why, you know, why can't they fix Burn Lake where it'll hold water and then divert all the runoff from these rains into Burn Lake and hold water there? That would make sense to me.
Maybe we can do a show on the possibility of making the city more water friendly.
You know, well, I mean, that would be one thing because all they'd have to do is line that clay, and Royal Jones has got a clay pit out there by the fairgrounds. I know that for a fact because we just hauled over